the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back. Oh, oh, oh.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
It's like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. You guys know the drill by now. Today, I've got a Big Ten preview for you guys right in time for the start of the season. Don't worry about the Northwestern-Purdue game last night. We ignored that in our preview. Talking over-unders with Kevin McGuire. Kevin is a guy you can find on Twitter at KevinOnCFB. He's everywhere, man. He's on Athlon. He has his own website, No 2 Minute Warning, and the same name for the podcast. He does such an awesome job. The Comeback, College Football Talk on part of the NBC Sports Network. He is everywhere, and he's been a great Twitter follow, I know, for me for several years. So if you don't follow him already, go check him out. He's writing about college football day in and day out, and he knows the Big Ten. He is a Penn State guy and knows the Big Ten, like I said, inside and out. Perfect guy to come on and give you the lowdown on really what should be a fascinating conference this year. You got really five teams with college football playoff aspirations. Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, and Penn State all in one division in the Big Ten East. And then Wisconsin in the Big Ten West, a team that's interesting in its own right. So we preview that and more with Kevin. Hope you guys enjoy the podcast. And this is going to be a two-for-one today. So you've got the Big Ten preview here, short and sweet with Kevin. And then I highly recommend checking out I Aim to Tease for the first week of the season with Rossi Three Stacks, because not only does he give you his three-team teaser of the week, we also get deep into the world of daily fantasy. So if you're checking out this podcast, I would highly recommend go. I wouldn't highly recommend. I require you. I'm demanding you to go join my league on DraftKings. College football is back for daily fantasy. It's on DraftKings.com. Check it out. $2 entry to be a part of the College Football Country League this year. It's going to be week to week, so we'll see how many people we get in week one. I will open it up and make it bigger in the following weeks if we get enough people. It's a lot of fun. If you never tried it out before, go hop over and listen to Rossi Three Stacks and I. We give you the lowdown, some tips on how to play. It's a ton of fun. Super low stakes to be a part of our league if you've never tried it before. Or even if you have and you just want to be part of it, that's great. We could use the trash talk. So go check that out on my Twitter page at Josh Parcell. Also on Rossi Three Stacks Twitter page at Rossi Three spelled out Stacks, S-T-A-X. So that's Three Stacks with an X. Check it out. You can get the link to that league on either page. We'd love to have you guys take a part in it. And maybe you win a little cash. So without further ado, let's get to the Big Ten with Kevin McGuire. And now I welcome on Kevin McGuire, Kevin on CFB on Twitter. And you, Kevin, you do everything, man. You're a contributor, College Football Talk for NBC, Athlon, you've been doing great work for them for a while. The Comeback, you have the No 2 Minute Warning podcast. I mean, you might be the only man in America who's a bigger college football fan than I am.
Well, I don't know about that, but I appreciate the compliment. But yeah, I do try to keep busy. It is a sport I love, and I love talking about it as many ways as possible. So I try to branch my arms out as far as I can and with as many different ways as I can. And it's been fun because I get to meet and talk about college football with people like you and others. And it's been a blast these last few years. I'm looking forward to this season right now.
Well, when I started putting together my list of people I wanted to cover each conference, I've been going through the Power Five, and you were the first guy I thought of for the Big Ten. I mean, you know this thing inside and out. I know you're a Penn State guy, but I know you know the whole league. And we'll get to Penn State, don't worry, but we'll start with some of the others. I've been kind of going worst to first with most of these conferences. And for the sake of time, I'll probably stay away from maybe some of the cellar dwellers in the Big Ten and spend more of our time on the meat of the conference. But we'll go over under with some of these teams. We'll throw it out there. Let's talk about the team and then maybe make a pick by the end. So okay. I'll get started in the West. The West, to me, clearly the weaker of the two divisions. I don't think I'm giving away any secrets there. But we'll start with Nebraska. They're the one that I think is really interesting to me. Obviously, Scott Frost comes in his first year. The homegrown kid back in Lincoln. Their over-under is 6.5. What do you make of Scott Frost? Because it seems like he can do no wrong right now. Before he's played a game, how do you think people are going to think about Scott Frost once they actually hit the field?
Yeah, honestly, I think this is going to be a fun year for Nebraska, and it's going to be a kind of a breath of fresh air, which is, I think, much needed at that program. And I think having a guy come back to the Nebraska program and who understands it, has been through it, and has also gotten some experience with, you know, life outside of Nebraska, I think that'll actually do them pretty well. I mean, as for this season, it's going to be tough. I mean, they're not just going to hit a light switch and all of a sudden Nebraska's back to, you know, the glory of the Tom Osborne days. I mean, this is going to be a little bit of a work in progress. And that's why I stress with the schedule they have, with the amount of work they have to do, you know, it's going to be tough just to get to a bowl game. And I think if they can get that 6-win total, I think that that'll be a successful season. It's certainly a step forward for the program. Their better years are going to be, you know, a little bit further down the road. But as far as this season's concerned, you know, starting up with a freshman quarterback, lay the foundation and have some fun doing it. I think that's what Scott Frost is going to be really good at this year.
I think as long as people have some patience with Scott Frost, I mean, I think he can turn this thing around at Nebraska, give him a couple years. And the thing I like about what he's doing is he's going with the freshman, Adrian Martinez, and he's going to take his lumps. Look, there's going to be ups and downs as there are with any freshman quarterback. And not to mention the fact it's the first year for this entire team in a new system. Scott Frost has done such a good job, not only at UCF, but he did a great job at Oregon as well, I thought. And it was actually funny, Kevin, a year ago, I mean, honestly, maybe to the day, a year ago, I mentioned that people were really going to regret that Oregon was really going to regret letting Scott Frost go. And I had so many Oregon fans jump down my throat immediately. And I don't know what the heck he did to tick off everybody in Eugene. But I went back. I'm petty like this. And about 3 months later, and when UCF was 12-0, I went back and favorited every single one of those tweets from those Oregon fans, because I think it was the day after Willie Taggart left to take the Florida State job. I said, I bet you wish you had Scott Frost right about now. That guy's clearly one of the top coaches on the rise in college football. I mean, period. I mean, you think about Tom Herman, PJ Fleck, Scott Frost is right there with those guys. I mean, guys who quickly rose through the ranks. It didn't take them long before a Power Five program snatched them up.
Yeah, I don't know what the people in Oregon were thinking either. I mean, obviously, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Let's understand that. But yeah, I mean, they had a guy sitting right there who seems like he enjoyed that location and everything. So I when he left Oregon, it was not so much of a surprise, because you got a chance to go and be a head coach, and that's something obviously he's been gunning for. But yeah, I mean, I like Willie Taggart. I like Mario Cristobal. But, you know, Scott Frost at Oregon would have been pretty fun too.
Exactly. So he's going to try to bring that to Nebraska. Looking at the over-under of 6.5, I mean, I look at the games that they have as locks. Akron is a lock. Troy is a lock. Minnesota at home, you would feel like, I wouldn't call it a lock, but they should win that. Illinois is a lock. So there you got, what, 4 games right there that are guaranteed wins. Now you're looking at the other 8 to try to split them. I don't know that I see. I mean, Michigan State, they're going to lose. That's at home. Ohio State, they're going to lose. Wisconsin's a loss. Michigan's a loss. I think this team probably 6 wins is the maximum. I would lean under here. I don't see them getting over 6. The big one that really is going to determine this could be Colorado in week 2, because Colorado's another team kind of flirting with that 6-6 mark this year, most likely.
Yeah.
And Nebraska gets it at home. It's great to see them playing again, by the way. I don't know if they've played in recent years, but I know when they were back in the Big 12, that used to be that Friday after Thanksgiving game. You remember, who was it, like Bobby Purify and Chris Brown running all over Nebraska? I still remember those days. That was the golden era for Nebraska, Colorado. I'm glad to see that one back on the schedule.
I'm glad to see that too, and I wish we could see more of these. I know Nebraska, I think, is going to play Oklahoma at some point in the future too. I don't know exactly when that starts, but it's nice to rekindle some of those old Big 8 and Big 12 rivalries. I want to see more of that for Nebraska. But as far as that over-under, I'm sticking with that under too. I mean, you said it was a 6.5.
Yeah.
When I went through and was going through my predictions, I'm pretty sure I had them at 5 wins with the possibility of getting to 6. Like I said, getting a bowl game, I think, is possible. It's within reach, but they need to get some of the swing games that you were kind of running through. And they need to get a bunch of them in their favor. So I'm going with the under. I feel pretty comfortable with that. You know, if they can get to 7 wins, that's awesome. But yeah, I think for this year, 6 wins is probably my ceiling.
Not to mention the fact that if Martinez goes out for any period of time at all, he's literally the only scholarship quarterback on the roster.
Yeah, that could be rough at some point.
I think that Nebraska is just too thin right now, but Frost will get it going. So let's move on. Iowa in the Big Ten West. They're at 7.5 as their over-under, which probably should be the over-under every year for Iowa. But right now, we look at Kirk Ferentz's team. They return 11 starters. They got Nate Stanley back at quarterback. Akram Wadley, I guess he's finally gone. I felt like he was there for a million years. But how do you feel about Iowa against 7.5? Like, you could literally copy and paste that every single year. I don't really see this being a team that jumps out, which Ferentz has every now and then. He does get that 10-11 win run in him. This, to me, doesn't strike me as that 11-win Iowa team we see every 5 years.
Yeah, you're right. It just seems like every so many years, Iowa goes on a run for 10-11 wins or whatever. I don't think it's quite that optimistic this year, but I do like the over. I think 8 wins is probably right around where I would peg Iowa. You know, they get Wisconsin at home. Maybe they can pull an upset. I don't know. I mean, they did just do that to Ohio State. I don't think it's an unwinnable game for Iowa, but I look at the schedule and I see a lot of wins that should be there for Iowa with what we expect out of Iowa. So I feel like 8 wins is probably safe. You know, it's possible 9 wins, but I would take the over for Iowa.
I think the over is probably the better bet. I mean, Nate Stanley last year, people didn't realize 26 touchdowns, 6 picks. I mean, that is efficient football, as they like to say. I mean, so he's back at quarterback for them, and they usually have a strong running game regardless of who it is. I trust Kirk Ferentz to figure it out. And the schedule, like you said, they avoid Michigan and Ohio State, and they avoid Michigan State. The only team they get from the Big Ten East who's a contender is Penn State. It is on the road. Even if they lose that game, I mean, man, the Big Ten West is down. Purdue's probably their toughest road game outside of that. This is a schedule that sets up. I think 7 wins is the absolute floor, and I think that 9 or even 10 wins could probably be possible just because of how bad the division is. I mean, I don't think this is a New Year's 6 Iowa team, but I think it could sneak its way to 10 wins if everything breaks their way.
Yeah, and I know we're going to get to Wisconsin soon, but I look at the schedules, and you know, when we talk about Wisconsin, we'll go over it again. But Iowa's toughest games are all coming at home, basically, aside from that road trip to Penn State, which they can afford to lose. But so if they take care of business at home, you look for a team that could potentially come out and, you know, take advantage of any stumbles by Wisconsin, it's probably Iowa.
Well, what's crazy, and we'll get to Wisconsin right now, is look, I'm almost going to contradict myself here for a second. I don't think Iowa is going to do this, but the opportunity is there, given their cross-division schedule, to maybe outpace Wisconsin in the West. Because what we just said, they only get Penn State, whereas Wisconsin has to play Michigan and Penn State. So if Wisconsin happened to lose both of those games, even if they beat Iowa, but Iowa ran the table outside of that, there's at least a chance that they could supersede them. I think Wisconsin's going to win the division. I think everybody agrees with us. But their over-under is 10. To me, that isn't easy. Now, I don't have the juice in front of me. I've got to imagine that this is heavily slanted towards wanting to get you to take the under, because it seems like 10's the floor. I mean, they have Michigan and Penn State on the road, and then the rest of the schedule is a cakewalk. I mean, at Iowa, we just talked about. Outside of that, at Purdue, I mean, there's really not an opportunity there for, or a lot of opportunities for losses. Is there any chance in your mind, Kevin, that this goes under 10?
Maybe I'm just going to surprise you, but yes, I do.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as high on Wisconsin as a lot of people seem to be going into the season. Not to disrespect them, because obviously, you know, running the ball and defense are typically what's going to work for Wisconsin. I think that's going to be the case this year. They do have some, you know, turnover on the defense, but running the ball is not going to be a problem. But the schedule is what concerns me, because, like you said, you know, going to Michigan, we're going to see what happens with Michigan. It's still kind of a mystery to me what to expect of them going into the season. But going to Penn State, I think that those are two really difficult road games. And I think that they probably lose both of them. And then all I'm looking at is one more loss on their schedule. Again, at Iowa is tough. I think at Northwestern could be interesting if Northwestern stays healthy. You know, I know Wisconsin's certainly the better team, but Northwestern's just a weird team to me sometimes. So I think 3 losses for Wisconsin, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. So while I think my official predictions probably had Wisconsin winning 10 or 11, I would be inclined to go with the under here.
Yeah, so Northwestern gave them a little bit of trouble last year at the end of September, and that game was in Madison. So they do go to Evanston this year. That's a trap game. Late October for sure. Here's what I think happens with Wisconsin, because I like Wisconsin. I'm with you. I think preseason number 4 is way too high for this team.
Way too high for me.
Way too high. And I think there are several teams in the Big Ten with more talent than them. They return 10 starters on offense. That's great. Their offensive line is fantastic. That's what we get from Wisconsin every year. And Paul Chryst has done a great job. I think they lose to Michigan in the Big House in early October. And I think that they go on the road to Penn State with only one loss on their schedule at the time. I think that would put them at probably 8-1 going into the Penn State game. I actually think they go into Happy Valley and win. And we'll get to Penn State here in just a minute. I have a lot of questions about Penn State, which I'll address. But I think that Wisconsin, with its back against the wall, this is the thing about Wisconsin. All they need to do is split the Michigan and the Penn State game. If they can take care of business in every other game, which they'll be favored by at least a touchdown, I have to imagine, in every other game they play, maybe with the exception of on the road against Purdue. I guess Iowa too, but they're going to be favored on the road in those games. They can split against Michigan and Penn State, and then they're playing in the Big Ten championship game with a spot in the playoff on the line. I mean, I think that they're, given what we've seen in college football, I think the Big Ten champ should certainly make it in, especially given how strong the league is this year at the top. Wisconsin has the easier division. They go 11-1. They're playing against one of those four teams, whoever makes it out of that bloodbath in the Big Ten East. And they only one game. You saw how close they came a year ago. I mean, they nearly knocked off Ohio State in that championship game last year. If they get to that same spot again this year, while I don't love Wisconsin, in a one-game neutral field scenario, I mean, anything can happen. They've got enough talent to win a football game. So I think with their back against the wall against Penn State, I mean, clearly I'm projecting what could happen in the first nine games of the season. I think if they get to that point, I actually like them to go into Happy Valley and beat a Penn State team that also might be a tad bit overrated. So I'm going to say over, because I don't see them losing three games. That's me personally. I think they end up splitting between those Michigan and Penn State games. So I like the floor of 10, but again, that division's so easy that Wisconsin should in a couple years, if Jeff Brohm's still at Purdue and Scott Frost has it rolling at Nebraska, Wisconsin won't have quite the stranglehold on this division that they do now. So if they're going to capitalize on having that weak division, they need to do it in the next year or two.
I agree.
So let's go to the East then, Kevin. So four teams in the East we know about, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. I'll go in reverse order with the win total. So 8.5 is Michigan State. Mark D'Antonio, we had that 3-9 season 2 years ago, which was inexplicable. Things got back on track last season, and now they return a ton of guys. And this is a team that has high expectations this year, even in a loaded division. What do you make of the Spartans this year?
I like them. Again, sort of like Wisconsin, they kind of fly under a lot of people's radars. It just feels like, you know, they've been playing so well for so long under Mark D'Antonio that, you know, play that disrespect card as they like to do. I think that's going to come up again this season because, you know, with all the attention that gets placed on Ohio State, Penn State, and even Michigan, you know, Michigan State's still there. And like you said, that 3-win season, I just kind of bat an eyelash at that one and just move on. I just look at that as a complete anomaly. Whatever happened that year, whatever. But this is a team that you can kind of expect is going to win nine games and be in the, you know, be a player in the division race. They may not be the team that's going to be the favorite to win it, but they're going to be a factor because people are going to have to get by them to do it. Now, Ohio State did that last year. Penn State did not. But this Michigan State team, with the pieces that they do have coming back, I think is going to be, once again, a team just to keep an eye on.
So here's what makes me nervous about Michigan State. They averaged plus 4.5 points per game last season. It was a very narrow scoring margin that they had, their average margin of victory. They did not produce a lot of points, 24.5. They gave up 20 a game. The defense is almost always fantastic under Mark D'Antonio. We know that to be the case. They bring back nine starters. They're going to have a great defense. Can they take a step forward on offense? I think it's going to be the key. I mean, Brian Lewerke gets a lot of credit, and I feel like I've heard his name a lot as a guy who could maybe break out and be one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten. L.J. Scott seems like he's been there for 800 years at running back for Michigan State. I remember when it was him and Madre London came in together, and now London obviously transferred out, but L.J. Scott's the guy. I like Michigan State. They are always one of the most well-coached teams in all of college football. Over-under of 8.5 seems low, but I'd be nervous to take the over because I worry about their firepower on offense. They're in a division with Ohio State, who certainly has the most of anybody. Michigan, I think, is going to be much improved on the offensive side. And, of course, Penn State has Trace McSorley. I think that Michigan State, of those four, of the big four in that division, to me, they have the worst offense, and it scares me a little bit. So I'm a little bit down on Sparty. I think they're still a top 20 team, but at 8.5, that means that you're essentially going to have to probably win one of those three games against the other power teams in that division, and then hope that you don't get tripped up somewhere else along the line. And Purdue at home, I think, could be a tricky game. I actually think, call me crazy, I think Arizona State is going to be harder than people expect in week two early on with Herm Edwards. I don't know what the heck Herm Edwards is doing down there, but he has talent this year. So with Manny Wilkins and N'Keal Harry, I think they could give Michigan State trouble. Not sure it's an upset, but it's at least a game that's trickier than your average week two at a conference game. So I don't know. I'm a little down on Michigan State, which I'm also down on Penn State. We'll find out in a minute, but it'll be interesting. I mean, do you think, I guess out of those four, where would you rank? Would you rank Michigan? You don't think Michigan State's going to win the Big Ten East, I'm sure. So do you see them as third, fourth in that pecking order?
I can't decide if I like them third or fourth, and a lot of that hinges on what I'm going to see out of Michigan, because I've been looking forward to the week one matchup against Notre Dame just to see whether or not Michigan's offense is going to improve at all. If it does, I start to like Michigan State as my fourth team, but you know, I'm kind of going back and forth right now. If I have to make a decision right now, I'm probably going Michigan State ahead of Michigan, but that could easily change because of all the concerns you addressed. I do have some questions about this team. You know, I feel like it's a 9-win team, but the 8.5 number is something I would back away from entirely because I don't know which way I want to go with it, because a lot of it hinges on what I'm going to see from some of their opponents. And, you know, the closer we get to that Arizona State game, the more I'm getting a little less confident about that one, because I thought Michigan State was going to have no problem with that. But, you know, there's just something funky about it. Mm-hmm. You know, going out to the Pac-12 country does not typically serve a lot of Big Ten teams very well. Okay. So, you never know what to expect out of that one. So I would back away from it. But if I had to make a pick, I'm probably going 9 wins. But yeah, it's not one I'm confident in at all.
Well, and we talk about Mark D'Antonio being such a good coach. I wrote something for the Action Network today talking about sucker bets and teams over the last 3 years that have cost a lot of people money. I was shocked to see Mark D'Antonio on that list. Michigan State has actually been one of the biggest sucker bets in college football in the last few years, meaning that a lot of teams have bet on the Spartans. And a lot of people have lost. They've covered, I think, 44% of the time, which is pretty bad when you're that far below 50. So this is a team I'm surprised, because it seems like Mark D'Antonio's teams always outperform expectations, but for some reason they don't cover the spread. And to me, I think it's more likely this team wins 8 games than it is that they win 10 or 11. So that's why I would shade under. But this is a stay away for me. But you talked about Michigan. Yeah. Let's talk about Michigan. They're 9.5. You're down on the Wolverines. I'll give you the floor first, and I'll see what you have to say. Maybe you can talk me out of Michigan, because I'm feeling pretty good about Harbaugh this year.
Well, I won't say – I don't know if I would say I'm down on Michigan. I think I'm just going into the season with some questions about Michigan. I love their defense. I have no problems with the defense. It's going to be, if not the best defense in the Big Ten, I'm sure maybe some people will make a case that it's probably going to be one of the best defenses in the country. The offense is the only question mark for me, because as much as people criticize Jim Harbaugh – I understand that this is probably, you know, his best chance to really get something going offensively, and it all hinges on whether or not Shea Patterson is going to be the guy that really fixes his offense. I don't expect that he's going to be an instant, tremendous upgrade, and now all of a sudden the Michigan Wolverines have the best offense in the country, but it's not going to take much to improve that offense. So if they get some stability out of Patterson and they can move the football a little bit more this year than they have certainly last year, this is a Michigan team that could potentially make a run here and put together 10 wins, maybe 11 wins, play for a Big Ten title. I still think there's still some rungs on the ladder that they're going to have to climb, but they could easily climb them as the season progresses, especially if they open up the season with a win at Notre Dame. That's going to instill a lot of confidence in me moving forward.
Where are you on the Jim Harbaugh has succeeded or has failed so far at Michigan? Where are you on that spectrum? Because I feel like everybody's somewhere. Everybody's got a strong take on Jim Harbaugh. What's your thought?
Yeah, I don't know why we have to be on one extreme or the other. I feel like he's kind of right in the middle, to be honest with you. This is what – he's been there for, what, 4 years now?
This is his fourth year.
This is his fourth year. That's right. And so, obviously, you know, it's taken some time to get the roster shaped the way that he wants it. I always understand that it's going to take a couple, even the best coaches, a couple of years just to get that roster put together the way you ideally would like. So maybe this is the closest he's had to that. I don't know for sure yet, but and again, it comes back to the quarterback position for me. But I really feel as though, you know, it's fair to have some questions about him. But let's not forget, just 2 years ago, Michigan was probably one play away from not just playing for the Big Ten title, but probably in the playoff.
Yep.
A lot of people forget about that because of what we saw last year. You know, he hasn't beaten Ohio State. You know, a lot of teams haven't beaten Ohio State. A lot of teams haven't played for the Big Ten title. I think one of the reasons that the pressure ramps up is because we saw James Franklin at Penn State and, you know, take Penn State to a Big Ten title. I think that that opens up the door for some criticism for Harbaugh because I think he walked into a better situation there. But, you know, to me, I know this is an important year for Harbaugh, I think. He needs to get a little bit more momentum to kind of back off the criticism. But I think he's just fine right now.
I'm with you. And I'm glad you brought up the Ohio State thing because this team was inches away from a Big Ten championship or at least playing for a Big Ten championship and then what would have been a playoff run. He inherited a team that, while it had a little bit of talent, they were unranked. This was a team that had low expectations outside of the fact that Jim Harbaugh was their coach. And they outperformed them in each of his first 2 years. I mean, relative to the talent he had on the roster, he made them better. Now, if you want to make the Saban comparison, Nick Saban went undefeated in his second year in the regular season at Alabama, made it right, and won a national title in his third. Saban got off to a better start at Alabama than Harbaugh has at Michigan. And I think Harbaugh tends to be considered in the same breath as those guys because of what he brought to the table with his history in the NFL and then at Stanford. I mean, that's what the expectation level was. So Harbaugh still has – there's definitely room to improve at Michigan. There's no doubt about that, but he's not failing, okay? And what irritates me – I'm in the minority on this, and I don't really care, but I don't just look at wins and losses and use that as my barometer for if a team is succeeding or failing. If a team like Michigan, who was outmanned against a team like Ohio State a couple years ago and came that close to winning, I give them a lot of credit for doing what they did in that game and coming as close as they did to the playoff. Yes, they didn't get there, and ultimately that's what you're decided by when we talk about legacy and certainly financially when it comes to what happens for the school and the conference and stuff. You got to get there. You got to win. But this team has been right on the doorstep. And this is the most talented team he's had. Certainly the best quarterback he's had. That's what everybody, we all agree on that with Shea Patterson. The problem for me is, of all the teams that have legitimate playoff hopes this year, top 8 to 10, 12 teams, this is the hardest schedule of all of them. I mean, they have to go on the road to Notre Dame, on the road to Ohio State, on the road to Michigan State. Nobody else has to do anywhere close to that, has to see anything close to that this regular season. That's going to be so daunting for them, and I think that makes me nervous when I try to decide, can Michigan actually make this run? Because if they were playing in the Big Ten West, or if they were playing in the ACC Coastal, if they were playing in a division that where they weren't just littered with top 15 teams on the road, I think this Michigan team would make the playoff. And I still think they have a chance. I think they're going to throttle Notre Dame in week one. That's one of my best bets for week one because of what Notre Dame's replacing on the O-line going against Michigan's outstanding front. I think Michigan actually wins that game by a couple touchdowns. But if they get through that, they get a little bit of a lull in the schedule to kind of work in Patterson into the offense, figure out who those weapons are going to be on the outside because Tariq Black is going to be gone. They don't see Wisconsin until middle of October. So if they can get to what would be 5-6-0, I think that they have enough momentum that could carry them through what's going to be a brutal final half of the season. I like Michigan. The schedule is really hard and it scares me to death, but I'm going to go over 9.5 because I believe in Jim Harbaugh and I think that they've come so close. I think this is the year they break through. The ball's got to bounce their way eventually. And for that reason, I like what Harbaugh's done, and I think Michigan goes over 9.5.
I'm going to go slightly under because I've got him at 9 wins. Okay. So if I have to go, I'm just going to go the other way. But we're right in the same area.
Right.
You know, it's not going to take, you know, win this weekend against Notre Dame. All of a sudden, I'm starting to think 10 wins because I just need to see this offense and I need to see the improvement from this offense before I can start to take them a little bit more seriously. But you're right. I mean, Notre Dame game aside, regardless of what happens there, they're going to have a chance to get comfortable and stack up a bunch of wins before that middle stretch where they have to play Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Penn State. And then obviously they'll have Ohio State at the end of the year. So I feel like this is going to be a team that if they do struggle against the Irish, it's going to be much better by the end of the year. So they're going to be a team to watch out for, especially with that defense. You don't need to score a whole lot of points with this defense. So we'll see what happens. I think we're going to see some improvement from Michigan this year for sure.
That I agree with that. So Penn State then at 9.5, they're also same over under as Michigan. No Saquon Barkley, no Joe Moorhead, but they do have Trace McSorley. And I watched College Game Day last week. I saw Lee Corso and Kirk Herbstreit get up on the soapbox for Trace McSorley and pick him to win the Heisman. How do you feel about your Nittany Lions this year?
Yeah, this is going to come off as a homer pick, but I'm actually a lot more optimistic about him than I feel comfortable saying because I feel like this, you know, I look at the schedule And I feel like they've got a really good chance to do some damage at home. And they've got most of their toughest games are going to be at home. They're going to have to play Ohio State at the end of September. I don't think that's an unwinnable game for them, although I think Ohio State's actually a better team. But who knows what the state of Ohio State's going to be. We're going to get a good sense for that, too. Obviously, Urban Meyer will be back for that one. But, you know, I think if Penn State can take advantage of their home schedule, that's wins against Ohio State and later on against Wisconsin, that should put them in a really good spot. And I feel like having Trace McSorley kind of be there for the first couple of weeks to help smooth some of the transition that they're going to have with this offense, with the new offensive coordinator, no more Saquon Barkley. You know, there's some things are going to change with the offense, but I think for the most part, it's going to look pretty similar to what we've seen with some, try to go for the big plays that McSorley likes to go for. I think they'll be able to keep that rhythm going as he establishes a connection with some of his newer receivers. The defense is a question, but I feel like they've been recruiting pretty well, and they'll develop some talent there. If they win against Ohio State, it's game on, I think. It's playoff or bust.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to come down to that. I mean, really, that two-game stretch, you get Ohio State, then a bye before Michigan right. State. I mean, the schedule could, given the league that they're in and the division they're in, it couldn't be a heck of a lot better for them, at least getting those teams at home and the week off and whatnot. So I'm with you there, but when I look at the five best teams in the Big Ten, to me, Penn State has by far the most question marks on defense. I mean, I don't think I'm breaking any news by saying
that. I think that's perfectly fair. Yep,
absolutely. So with those question marks, coupled with the fact they just lost probably the best running back they've ever had. I mean, if you want to go Kajana Carter on me, maybe. Curtis Enos, I think Saquon Barkley, to me, certainly in that mix. So Saquon Barkley did everything for Penn State. To lose him and the guy who orchestrated that offense. I mean, James Franklin has done a good job, and he's proven in the past that he can generate a good offense before Joe Moorhead was there. Reality is he brought Moorhead in for a reason, and Moorhead got an SEC head coaching job for a reason.
Absolutely.
I don't think it's impossible that Penn State comes out of this division as the champ, but if I'm a betting man, which I am, I'm probably going to rank them below the other teams. I'm less confident that Penn State can reach that ceiling than I am about Ohio State or Michigan. To me, they're right in that mix with Penn State. I think they're a cut below Ohio State and Michigan, but I think Michigan State and Penn State are right there. Any of those four teams could emerge. Trace McSorley is going to be the guy. I mean, he's the focal point of this team, no doubt. They've got some receivers returning. But I think that losing Saquon Barkley is really going to hurt them. And Miles Sanders might be a great player. He ain't Saquon. Nobody's Saquon Barkley. And I think that's going to be hard for any team to replace.
It's very difficult to replace Saquon Barkley, because if you watch Penn State last year, you know, even the games where Barkley didn't put up a whole bunch of rushing yards, there's a reason for that, because the defenses were pretty much selling out to make sure they weren't going to be on his highlight reel.
Right.
And he forced a lot of defenses to play a little bit differently than they probably will this year. So it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment, I think. And I don't know if that's going to put more pressure on McSorley or if it's going to alleviate some of it. So that's just something we'll have to wait and see exactly how defenses are playing them. But I agree. I mean, replacing Saquon Barkley is pretty much an impossible task. But if you have to do it, you know, Miles Sanders was a five-star recruit, one of the top running backs in the country. So it's not like they're replacing him with just a walk-on out of the student section. So, I mean, there's still some potential there. Problem is he hasn't exactly had the opportunity to carry the ball as much as you probably would have liked for a player of that caliber because Saquon Barkley was there. So I don't know if that's a real bad problem to have.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's part of the transition. Well, you know, that's what the first couple of games are really all about for Penn State, I think.
For sure. Like I said, wouldn't shock me to see them at 11-1 at the end of the year, but I think the safer play to me is picking them right around 9 wins. But let's talk about Ohio State. Final team here in the Big Ten. 10.5 is the over-under. I mean, God, we could talk about all sorts of stuff. I really don't even want to get into everything off the field. I want to talk about the team that's going to be lining up in Scarlet and Gray this fall. So new quarterback Dwayne Haskins, 5-star recruit a couple years ago, almost went to Maryland, ends up at Ohio State, and now we saw glimpses of him against Michigan last year. If that guy turns out to be the reincarnation of Cardale Jones, or, I mean, not the direct comparison, but a guy who had the kind of success that JT Barrett did, Ohio State's going to be a playoff contender. I mean, I think that's the storyline here. But what do you make of Ohio State with Haskins and obviously the weapons he has around him?
I don't see any reason to be too concerned about what Ohio State's going to do this year. You know, as far as the personnel and the roster, they've got so much talent there. It's the Big Ten's Alabama because they've recruited so well for so long, and they did that before Urban Meyer got there. But once Urban Meyer got there, it got kicked up another few notches. and they've been developing talent and they're preparing talent as well as anybody possibly can in the Big Ten. So the coaching staff knows what they're doing. They've been doing this for a long time, and they've been thriving with some of the best teams that we've seen out of the Big Ten the last couple of years. They haven't always won the Big Ten. They're not perfect, but this is a team that is, you know, as well-built as anybody can imagine around the Big Ten. So as far as the offense is concerned, I don't see any reason to be concerned about them, because they're going to have the first couple games that are pretty easy, I think, to walk through and just kind of work out through the kinks, especially with the coaching situation that's going to be going on these first couple games.
Right.
Look at the schedule, though. I mean, there are some question marks, I think, and possible losses, or at least games that should be a little bit concerning. The TCU game, obviously, without Urban Meyer, makes it a little bit more interesting. They got to go on the road to Penn State. Of course, we talked about this division already. We're going to have to play Michigan and Michigan State. So it's not going to be easy. Whoever gets out of this conference, certainly this division, is going to earn it. That's for sure.
Ohio State
just continues to be loaded with talents.
Yeah. So talent-wise, Ohio State, best team in the division. No secrets
yes.
there. But kind of like Clemson, I've talked a lot about Clemson because, I talk about the ACC every day. Clemson and Ohio State are two teams that are going to outmatch everybody they play in the regular season. Yet both teams, they're prone to hiccups. I mean, this has happened now several times. I mean, you think back to 2014, it didn't end up ultimately costing them, but they lost to Virginia Tech. You know, last year they laid the egg to Iowa. They had that blocked field goal game against Penn State. And from my mind, Ohio State was the much better team in that game. I understand why Penn State was able to come away with it. But,
yeah,
but Ohio State lays eggs. I mean, this is what happens. Like, they lay eggs at times. And we're in an era in the playoffs where you can get away with it for a game and probably still make it in. But as far as the over-under is concerned, with a division that's as tough as this one is, where you're playing against three top 15 teams throughout the course of your season, I don't think TCU is really going to challenge them. I'm not as high on the Horned Frogs as some others, but Purdue on the road is tricky, and that's the type of game Ohio State would lay an egg in. I think that this is an under at 10.5, given the off-the-field drama. I think there are more red flags around Ohio State than there are reasons for me to believe in them, other than the fact that they have the most talent. And that means a lot, but it doesn't mean everything. And I think that I'm not going to go out and put my mortgage on Ohio State under, but I'm also thinking that I could see a lot more going wrong for Ohio State than going right. So to me, I think 10.5 might be a little bit of a safer play, but we'll see. I mean, they could easily go 12-0 and win the national title.
Yeah, I got them at 11-1, so I'll take the over. But it's, yeah, you're right. 10.5 is a tough number with a team that does have at least some mild concerns and a schedule that's going to be pretty interesting. And certainly with all the, who knows what's going to happen off the field. You know, I know we're not even talking about that, but I mean,
yeah,
like I said, the talent is there. It typically is there, but you're right. There is a game somewhere that kind of pops up out of nowhere where Ohio State lets one slip away. But that's why I've got them at 11-1, because I do think they're going to slip up at some point.
Yeah,
and it may be the Penn State game. It may be against Michigan State, or like you said, Purdue is actually a pretty interesting team to keep an eye on, because that would be pretty interesting. But and that's a game where, as long as if Ohio State's 11-1 and their one loss is to Purdue, they're going to have wins basically on the road against TCU, at Penn State, and then Michigan State. They're going to look pretty good as a playoff contender for sure.
Well, and the beauty of it for Ohio State fans is if they end up going 11-1 and they win the Big Ten, that means that they're going to have so many quality wins on their schedule. They will have no concerns about making the playoff as a one-loss team. They're not going to be fighting for that four spot.
And that sets up the situation where the Big Ten championship game is essentially a play-in game for the playoff. Because if we've got Wisconsin coming out with an 11-1 record and you got Ohio State 11-1, yeah, winner that's going in the playoff for sure.
Exactly. This is probably the worst time ever to say this, but Urban Meyer has hired a damn good staff. I mean, with Kevin Wilson, a former head coach, great offensive mind, Ryan Day, one of the brightest young offensive minds in all of college football, and then Alex Grinch, who single-handedly revitalized Washington State's defense over the last couple of years, made them relevant, and then, of course, Greg Schiano. I mean, the guy has so many coaches on his staff with head coaching experience and just great young up-and-coming rising stars in the coaching ranks. Even with him away, there's not another staff, I think, in the country that I would trust more to be able to handle this on an interim basis than the guys with the experience that they have there. So take that for what you will. I think Ohio State's still probably an underplay, but again, don't bet the mortgage on it because this team's so talented. Yeah. I would never want to bet against a team that has as much future NFL talent as they do. So, Kevin, we got to run. So that's it for the Big Ten. Thanks, man. I appreciate you joining me. We'll get you on again sometime for sure this season because I'm excited for it to get started. And once again, why don't you plug what you're up to right now, where our listeners can read you, where they can listen to you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. We have to do this again. I'll have to get you on my podcast sometime, too. But you can read me at NBCSports.com with College Football Talk. I do some stuff for Athlon Sports, which actually does a lot of Big Ten game previews and stuff like that, so that's always fun. And then I've got my blog at No2MinuteWarning.com with number two, which also has a podcast, which you can check out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, all that good stuff.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks again for joining me, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.